Welcome to Just a Minute. Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country and around the world, but also to welcome to the show four exciting, talented, dynamic players of this game, and they are seated on my right, Paul Merton and Tony Hawkes, and seated on my left, Graham Norton and Sheila Hancock. Please welcome all four of them. Beside me sits Sarah Sharp. She's going to help me keep the score and blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And we're going to begin with a great broadcaster, Graham Norton. Graham, here's an interesting subject. My personal assistant. I don't know whether you have one or not. But tell us something about that in this game starting now.
My personal assistant. Yes, I do have one. And no, I don't know why either. You're just supposed to. It's as if somehow I'm very busy and can't cope with all the demands of my life. This isn't really true. However, sometimes, oh, it's handy. At the moment, while I speak, my personal assistant, and this is true, is on a train to Bexhill to collect my phone because I left it there. Now, I could have done that tomorrow when, in fact, I'll be doing laundry. So is it more sensible to pay someone to wash my clothes so I'd be free to collect the mobile device from the seaside town I mentioned, or pay, oh, that's twice with the pay, to someone who could, I've rambled.
Yeah. No, you've actually been interrupted.
You said mobile twice, didn't
I know
you
did.
Yeah. Oh, did I?
I can't believe that you actually sent somebody to get your phone from Bexhill.
It was worse to ask her to do some laundry for me tomorrow while I'm driving to Bexhill.
Well, with the money you earn, you could have bought a new mobile phone.
What's that about? That seems crazy. That seems worse. It seems worse to just abandon a phone. Otherwise, she'd just been sat in an office doing nothing.
As well as the bank.
Tomorrow's a busy day for her.
You could buy two phones, one for London and one for the country.
I could. You know what'll happen. I'll just leave them both somewhere. Mm.
Yeah. Let's get on with just a minute, shall we? Sheila, you've got about 9 seconds to go on my personal assistant starting now.
I'm getting to the age where I very much need personal assistance, crossing the road, putting the cat out. I have got a wonderful woman called Claire.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. And this occasion, it was Sheila Hancock, who was the only one who got any points in that opening round. Tony Hawkes, we'd like you to begin the next round. The subject, A Tale of Two Cities. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
A Tale of Two Cities. I'm going to do a tour later this year, and one of the cities will be Exeter, the other Aberdeen. It's just a disappointment they're on consecutive nights and not very well planned by the manager of this event, as it happens. Dickens, of course, wrote a book called A Tale of Two Cities, 45 chapters or something. I remember reading it when I was little, set in Paris and London. Terrific read. Well done, Chaz. Now, if I was to stand on a small mound...
A poor chance.
Well, a hesitation slightly there.
Yeah, it was a slight hesitation. Paul, you have the subject. You have 17 seconds. On A Tale of Two Cities with you, Paul, starting now.
There have been several film adaptations of A Tale of Two Cities. One thinks fondly of Dirk Bogarde, creating a magnificent heroic role for British cinema. And if we go back further in time, Ronald Colman indeed essayed this very same character in Hollywood's golden...
Sheila Hancock.
He's a character.
Did I say character?
I think you said Dirk Bogarde invented a character.
Well, I might have done. I thought it was roll. Did I say roll first
Did you?
Time?
Maybe.
Roll, that's right. Yes, well done, Paul.
Well, we'll see in the repeat. I'll check it.
Right.
However, I'm willing to concede because I'm a good player.
You're a great player. That's why you keep coming back, my darling.
Because you can't get any other women to stand up to these men. It all stems from when Kenneth used to say you shouldn't have women on this show.
That's right, many years ago, yes. And you were one of the few who could stand up to him and shout him down. Paul, half a second to go.
Well, hang on, can I just remind people, I was the one challenged, so it's not really my fault that it's half a second to go.
Paul, half a second, starting now.
Liverpool and...
So, Paul, speaking as a whistle, when gained the extra point of others in the round, he's now taking the lead ahead of all the others. And, Sheila, we'd like you to begin the next round. The subject is making a difficult decision. What I have to do all the time in this show, but you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Do you know, I have discovered that trying to make decisions is the thing that makes me most ill. Occasionally I get a headache and I don't know why, and I think it's because I'm trying to make up my mind about something. Like in this game, I have to make a decision whether to interrupt, because then I will get a subject that possibly I know damn all about. So I think, what shall I do? Will I do that, press the buzzer, or will I actually sit tight? And I've repeated, will I?
Yes. Yeah, repetition of will I.
Will I, yes. 31 seconds for you, Tony, making a difficult decision, starting now.
Whenever I have a difficult decision to make, I take myself down to the lakeside, sit there, pensively... Oh, I can't be bothered.
Graham, you challenge first.
It was hesitation.
Making a difficult decision, Graham, and there are 23 seconds starting now.
When I have to make a difficult decision, I think to myself, WMNPD, what might Nicholas Parsons do? Then I dwell on what action that great man might take, and with that thought in my mind, I sally forth, and that isn't the course of action I decide.
So Graham was then speaking as the whistle went. I'd like to give you a bonus point for all that flattery, Graham, but I can't favour people. You're in second place, just behind Paul Merton. And Paul, it's your turn to begin. The subject is ventriloquism. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
I've always had a big soft spot for ventriloquists. I remember with great affection one called Arthur Worsley, and his particular gimmick was that the dummy did all the talking, why he himself as a character never spoke. I also loved Neville King, and he had an old man dummy that was...
Graham Challenge.
Repetition of loved.
Yes, I did.
You loved Arthur Worsley?
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Pity we're going to have a whole history of all the different Vents... Throughout the whole of the history.
It's fantastic. I love it. Always loved it.
So Graham's gone in now. 45 seconds. Ventriloquism starting now.
I recall one very special Christmas when I got a fort, a goldfish, and a ventriloquist dummy. His name was Finnegan. That was written on the box, and I could read. I was quite a smart child. It had ginger hair, a small cap with a sort of houndstooth check and a matching jacket. Black trousers, since you ask, and small plastic boots. It was mass manufactured, so probably wasn't the greatest ventriloquism.
Tony Challenge.
Was there a hesitation there?
There's hesitation in the middle of the word.
Well,
actually,
I couldn't remember what the subject was, so I was good whether I could say ventriloquist, but it's ventriloquism.
Ventriloquism, yes,
so I couldn't say that.
I will give it to you, Tony. Hesitation. 13 seconds, ventriloquism starting now.
A very funny ventriloquist act that my father used to find hilarious was Sandy Powell, who used to be inadequate, hopeless at doing it.
Challenge.
They're actually too used to.
That's right.
Oh, well,
who's used to it.
Oh, well spotted.
And you have 3 seconds, Sheila, starting now.
Tommy Cooper used to make me roar when he tried to do a ventriloquist act.
So they all got points in the round. Sheila was speaking as a whistle when gained that extra one. She's equal to Paul in the lead. And Graham, it's your turn to begin.
Oh, yes.
And now the subject is the speaking clock. 60 seconds, starting now.
I am actually very fond of the old speaking clock, or Tim, as we used to call him. How droll. When I wasn't working as an actor, sometimes I would be called to auditions. I lived in fear of someday getting a job. So I developed a monologue from a fictitious play where I was the character of the speaking clock. And I just said things like, at the third beep, the time will be 1:45. The casting people and director would look at me like I was a lunatic, close to the truth. And then I was sure I would not get the role in any production, and therefore I wouldn't have to go and do it. I wasn't very keen on being that thing that I mentioned earlier. You can tell, because I'm not saying it. Now, the other factor when it comes to the speak... Oh!
That hasn't happened for a while. Graham Norton, speaking as a whistleman, gained that extra point. But as he went for the full 60 seconds without being interrupted, he gets another point as well. So you're now in the lead, 1 point ahead of all the others, Graham.
I'm sweating. Yeah.
Nicholas, can I make a suggestion?
What's that?
Well, I'd like to introduce a new thing, that if you talk for a minute without being interrupted, you get a cake as well.
Yes, if you'd like to bake them and bring them along, we'll do that.
Well, I will give you a cake. I'll send it to you through the post.
That's very nice of you.
I actually think you deserve more than one extra pill. One extra pill.
Don't give all our secrets away.
Don't tell him we're on pills.
It's because he had the pill. He did the minute in the first place. I want him drug tested afterwards.
I withdraw
the offer of the cake.
Be on pills to do this show.
All right, shall we give him an extra point?
Yeah, give him an extra point.
I'll take it.
It's not charity, it's just appreciation of talent.
Absolutely.
So, Tony, it's your turn to begin, and the subject now is sending postcards. Will you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now?
In these days of electronic communication, email, Facebook, etc., everyone with their computers in little cafes when they're at the seaside, not so many people are sending postcards as they used to. Think of the poor postcard sellers on the seafront, distraught as they see passers-by stop, look at their wares, but not make a purchase. We carry on with our comfortable little life.
I'm challenged.
Can we just stop this bleak diatribe?
So sad.
It's awful.
You're in a dreadful mood.
Oh, broken Britain.
send the pills. Can we get the pills up this end, please? When I say up this end, I mean just at the table. I mean.
Technically, I was a bit down, but within the rules of just a minute, I think you're allowed to be.
Yes, and your challenge was...
It was me.
I would say it was a deviation from the cheery norm that Radio 4 listeners expect. People listen to this show all over the world, sometimes in quite depressing places. They don't want this, Tony.
No, you're right.
They don't want to hear about unemployed postcard sellers.
I tell you what, I will concede because the strength of your argument is magnificent. Furthermore, I'll give you a second cake.
Do you want to give him the subject as well?
Oh.
All right, that's very generous of you.
Oh, too generous, I would say.
Right. Well, can you be less miserable on sending postcards? 32 seconds starting now.
Oh, I remember the joy and happiness of selecting a postcard on the seafront. You took it. Very seriously. You would examine each card and think, well, yes, that has the harbour, but you can't see the castle. Ooh, this one is at night.
Tony Challenge.
Well, this is getting depressing now. There's no joy in this. Can't make a decision. It's agony. I don't think Radio 4 listeners can't take any more of that.
I didn't realise it was such a minefield.
But actually, it is all part of the culture of sending postcards, what Graham is describing. So it was an incorrect challenge.
Was it?
Yes, indeed.
Feeling miserable.
It was as correct as mine.
No, it is. And I send a lot of postcards. I always like to keep in touch. Right, 14 seconds. Another point to you, Graham. Sending postcards, starting now.
I am so sick of getting postcards from Nicholas Parsons. Morning, I wake up. There's another one. Some dull hedgerow. Wish you were here. No, I don't Chance, Nicholas. Oh, I've said that twice.
Paul Chance.
I said Nicholas twice.
He did, yes.
Repetition.
Wait, you can't have too much of Nicholas, can you? I don't know. Anyway, Paul, you've got him. Oh, with 1 second to go. Tell us something about sending postcards in 1 second, starting now.
Wish you were here, isn't it?
So Paul Merton speaking as a whistle wind. Gain that extra point. He's creeping up on our leader, who is still Graham Norton, and the other two are in third and fourth place. And Sheila, we'd like you to begin the next round. Ooh, interesting subject. Barn dances. Have you ever been to a barn dance? If not, try and tell us something about them in this game, starting now.
Actually, I have very happy memories of barn dances, which don't have to be held in a barn. Ours was held in the Congregational Hall in Bexley Heath. It used to be for folk dances, such as Vervelita or Strip the Willow, occasionally.
Tony Chance.
Disgusting.
It's a dance, I promise you. It suddenly came
from my subconscious.
I thought you said strip the widow.
No, strip willow, the willow. Willow.
Seems a bit harsh at a funeral, doesn't it?
I may be quite wrong, but I think there is a dance called strip the willow,
darling,
isn't there?
There's a dance called strip the willow.
We did it, strip the willow. We did strip the widows. Sheila, you've got the benefit of the doubt, and you've got 40 seconds on barn dances starting now.
On these occasions, my mum used to be at the piano, and people gave her requests. It was very popular. Some of the dances were in fours or in long lines. You used to do twirly bits and sitting down and curtsying. I remember the last waltz was the great thing, because whoever asked you to have that was going to take you home. Mind you, because my mum was there, she wouldn't let me.
So. Repetition of mum or...
No,
or,
I said
or
mother.
Or hesitation just before.
Oh.
I won't go for hesitation.
Well, what are you going for?
Well, I buzzed for hesitation.
And no, you changed, didn't you? You went for mum first.
Well, she said mum, then mother, and then
No, she knew what
she
said.
Oh, I made a ghastly error.
An incorrect challenge. You did say mother first. And 15 seconds, Sheila, with you on barn dances, starting now.
I believe that nowadays barn dances have turned into something called line dancing, where you have a caller and people do American, such as the Vervelita.
There was a slight hesitation.
Yeah.
There was a slight hesitation, and you started with the subject, and you've gone for 58 seconds.
Oh, you're joking!
Yes. Oh, I thought
never
you were
mind,
get on
I
the...
did very hesitate.
Yeah, I thought you were going to get on to the Dashing White Sergeant, which is one
oh,
I
that
remember.
Was one, yeah.
Yes, that's right, yes. Yeah. Strange name.
The Dashing White Sergeant?
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
That was a good one.
You know.
So did you have to go home with the person who you did the last walk?
Yeah, you in had... those days you did. Was well, you the... didn't have to. My mother wouldn't let me. But, I mean, if somebody asked you to do the last waltz, it usually meant that they wanted you to go home with them.
That's
wow.
Right.
It was very chaste, darling. Just left you at the back door. That's
it. It was all very discreet.
Yeah. I think discreet is different than chase.
Well, it was. It was a discreet kiss under the portals of the house.
A kiss under where?
Under the portals.
How was that last night? Would he kissed me under the portals?
So, Paul, you got in with 2 seconds. On barn dances, starting now.
Barn dances, farmer's shop.
I think, as Sheila did 58 seconds,
yes, absolutely.
Didn't get that extra point for going for the extra two. She should have an extra point anyway. Mm. But Paul gets it for speaking when the whistle went, right? Oh, following what we've been talking about, Paul, here's an interesting subject on which you want you to begin. Achieving longevity. 60 seconds starting now.
Well, to be given this subject by Nicholas Parsons is indeed a compliment, because if anybody has achieved longevity, it's the esteemed chairman of this magnificent show, Fast on Radio 4 in 1967. Just a Minute remains one of the most popular broadcast in its medium ever shows ever made, and I can say radio again. But you know what I meant.
Hesitation.
I know, what a pity. I was enjoying it so much.
Never missed a recording, have you, Nicholas?
42 seconds, Tony, on achieving longevity, starting now.
There are 7 ways of achieving longevity. 1, go down to the lake and think carefully before you take a difficult decision. 2, be utterly miserable most of the time. 3, Stand next to somebody in a bus queue who is more wealthy than you. 4, talk utter rubbish in the hope that someone will challenge you.
4 new challenge.
His wish was granted. It was sort of, it's not really, you can't achieve longevity by standing next to somebody in a bus stop who's got more money than you.
Absolutely.
I don't think the other 3 were that good.
No, one. That was the benefit of the doubt.
Why did you announce 7 ways? You couldn't think of one.
No. Yes, there is a flaw
one
there.
Sensible or positive way amongst that list you gave us. And Paul, you got in with 18 seconds to go, achieving longevity starting now.
There are 15,000 ways of achieving longevity. Start 1.
Tony Challenge.
I'm afraid he's 14,993 out.
Everybody knows there's 7.
Well, you didn't. You couldn't think of 1.
Well, if I didn't know what 7 were, how are you going to go what 15,000 were?
You can't judge my ignorance by your standards.
So what is your challenge within the rules?
Well, deviation.
Why?
There aren't 15,000.
No, there aren't. I mean, they're no more than the 7. No,
yes.
I think I give benefit of doubt on this one. I say 14 seconds.
Just to remind you were on reason number 3. Out of your 7.
Right. So, Tony, achieving longevity, 14 seconds, starting now.
The 7th one, because I'd like to work backwards now, is to eat healthy food. Few people would disagree with this sensible advice. Carrots!
Sheila, challenge.
I disagree, actually. You see people who've reached 100, they usually say things like, oh, I have a glass of whiskey before I go to bed, and they don't eat sensible food, so I don't believe in any of that.
Not necessarily, but it could be one of the ways that people do achieve longevity.
I think there's more going for it than standing next to somebody who's got more money than you.
I don't know why you didn't start with this one. Why did you make that number 7? Why not make that number 1? Because it actually means something.
Well, if I get the subject back, I might extend that.
Oh, no, don't put yourself out on my account.
You should let me have the subject, because I'm 78 and I can tell you how I've reached that age. Yes. Sheer luck is the answer.
Oh.
And pills. Lots of pills.
Sheer luck and pills. That's 6 and 5. I was coming to them.
Oh, tell us what 4 was. It's the only one we ever had.
Well, I'm older than you, Sheila.
I know. And, well, you can have the subject.
No, why don't we let Nicholas have the subject?
How many seconds are left?
Yeah, Nicholas.
Right. 4 seconds. There are many ways in achieving longevity. One is eating sensibly. Another one is picking plenty of exercise. Well, aren't we just moving into the final round? Oh, that's very interesting. Paul Merton's just in the lead, 1 point ahead of Graham Norton, who's 1 point ahead of Sheila Hancock, who's 3 points ahead of Tony Hawkes, and Nicholas Parsons has got 1 point. When the whistle went, right. Yeah. I think, don't think I have a chance of winning. And
it's quite good news for me that you're there, though. Otherwise, I'd be in last place.
Graham, we'd like you to begin this round.
Nicholas.
The subject is eavesdropping. 60 seconds starting now.
Eavesdropper, beware. For though it seems very interesting and fun to overhear a conversation that you're not supposed to, often you will hear... Have I said that? Yes, I can.
Yes, repetition of hear.
Yes, he said hear before. Eavesdropping is with you, Tony. 45 seconds available, starting now.
We have some eaves in the barn where I do a lot of dancing, and the birds get up there, and there are so many droppings, it's quite unpleasant. I'm trying to do a willow stripping.
Again, Tony.
Strip the willow, not willow stripping. Strip the willow.
He's talking about bird droppings, not eavesdroppings. Yeah, the eaves aren't pooing on you.
No, it is listening in on other people's conversation.
Well, I thought we were encouraged to take things off in other directions, humorous and enlightening ways.
Oh, now he's going to be depressed. Yeah. You are, Tony. You are allowed to do that.
Now I feel awful.
You're
Well, except he's always like this, so what does it matter?
You can make it worse.
I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and say that you have 35 seconds on eavesdropping starting now.
There was a man in our office. Nobody liked him.
And one day, two other people who worked in said bureau were on the train coming to the place where they earned money. And the person...
hesitation.
Yes. So you see, you get back in, Tony. It's all very fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
19 seconds, eavesdropping, starting now.
I will very often tiptoe outside the confessional in a Catholic church, even though I'm not of that faith. And listen...
Paul Chance.
If you're not of that faith, what are you doing in a Catholic church?
Well, I'm going in there to hear all the confessions.
But you just said you didn't.
What do you mean I didn't?
Oh, you do want to eavesdrop on people's confessions.
I can't remember what I said.
You can go into a Catholic church, you're not a Catholic, just when you go touring in Europe and all those beautiful cathedrals and churches,
yes,
which are Roman Catholic, you go in to admire the beauty.
But
and
Tony isn't going in to admire, he's going in to sneak up and listen to confession, which I think is deviation of the worst kind.
That is.
Well, I wouldn't say it was deviation of the worst kind, but I'll go with what you're saying generally, just for the sake of light entertainment.
He went in originally for other reasons. So you have the benefit of the doubt on this one, Tony, and you still have eavesdropping and 11 seconds starting now.
I had 7 reasons for going into the said place of worship. 1, I had spent some time standing next to somebody wealthier than I had.
1 I can't believe it! Tony Hawks and Sheila Hancock were equal with 8 points in 2nd place. And only 1 point ahead were equal winners Graham Norton and Paul Merton. A round of all 4 of them! So a very fair result because they all contributed so much and were such fun. And... all I have to say is I hope you've enjoyed the show. And I give my thanks to these 4 fine players of the game, Paul Merton, Tony Hawks, Sheila Hancock, Graham Norton. I thank Sarah Sharp, who's helped me with the score, blown her whistle delightfully when the 60 seconds elapsed. And we are grateful to our producer, Talusha Gilani, and we're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're very grateful to this lovely audience here in the Radio Theatre who've cheered us on our way. So from the audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and the team up here, goodbye, and tune in the next time we play Just a Minute. Yeah.